Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Murder 123. This is Dr. John Stamey. So glad to have all of you listening in and all my co-hosts tonight. We got a great lineup. We got an incredible story, one of the most explosive murders in the history of the United States, and we haven't even gotten to Charles Manson yet. We're in the mid to late 1800s with, of course, the one and only Lizzie Borden. First of all, I want to welcome from Harlan, Kentucky, the county and city of many, many murders, Tony Filosi. How you doing tonight, Tony?
I'm doing great, John. How about you? I've been looking forward to tonight's show. This is going to be one interesting episode.
Well, I think so, and we are so glad to have you. And a little bit later on tonight, you'll be doing the cell block, and that's going to be a biggie. So we're going to have a great time. Glad to have you. Now, Miss Robin is not feeling well. She's under the weather tonight. So our guest co-host is Jeremiah Wisorek. Jeremiah is from Raleigh, but he's originally from Massachusetts, the home of Lizzie Borden. Jeremiah, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, John. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here. It's going to be a wild and crazy show because I tell you what, we have a lot of fun on Murder 123, and we talk about some of the great murders that have occurred in this and previous centuries. So without any further ado, let's talk about this. Violent murders seem to have really been popular in this country. I mean, Charles Manson, of course, is the hack job of Sharon Tate and is one of the most famous murders ever. But this story comes up from 1892 in Falls Church, Massachusetts. Now, you know, there's an old song, Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. And then she saw what she'd done, and she gave her father 41. Now, it may not have been 40 and 41, but it was a bunch. And there are two murders associated with none other than the 32-year-old Lizzie Borden. She was born in 1860. Her father, Andrew Borden, was indeed a tightwad. And their home didn't have plumbing and electricity, even though he was a fairly well-to-do manufacturer and financier in Falls Church, Massachusetts. And Lizzie, when she was growing up, was involved in church activities like teaching Sunday school and dealing with immigrants in the United States. And at that time, immigrants were normally from Ireland, which is kind of different from today. She was involved in a lot of Christian organizations, and she was involved in the Woman's Christian Temperance Union, which was a group that was against the manufacture and sale of alcoholic beverages, and something that we, of course, have legalized now. Now, her mother died, Sarah, and Andrew married a lady named Abby Gray. And now, they never had a great relationship, which might be an understatement. Andrew was absolutely a monster to Lizzie and his daughter, his other daughter. And it reached the point in 1892 that the two daughters had to take a vacation of about 2 months in New Bedford, Massachusetts until the end of July. Things were getting pretty heated because it turns out that Andrew was giving houses and property to his new wife's family members. And of course, the daughters were getting very concerned because they were watching their inheritance just disappear and just vanish. And I mean, this was a lot of money. So what happened is the night before this famous murder, which would have been August the 3rd, 1892, their their real mother's brother, John Morse, came to the house to talk to Andrew about some business, about the disbursement of the property and everything. Tempers were flaring, and it was a real scene. Now, it turned out that several days before this murder, about on August the 1st, the entire household, including not only Andrew, his wife, Abby, and the two daughters, and the maid, who was Maggie Sullivan, had gotten very, very sick. And it was said that they had cooked some mutton, some lamb, and it was sitting on the stove because they didn't have any type of refrigeration, and everybody got sick. Although Abby was worried that her husband and the whole family had been poisoned, because Andrew was not a very popular man in the town. He was a ruthless businessman, and she was very concerned. And this is very important. It's an important part of this story. So John Morse, who was Sarah, the original mother's brother, arrived at the house on the evening of August the 3rd, 1892, and they had dinner, and he slept in the guest room. Now, after breakfast on August the 4th, Andrew went for his walk, and John Morse went out to see his daughter, who lived in Falls Church, Falls Church. And so he left to go see her, to buy a couple of ox, and then come back around lunchtime. Now, what happened is now a matter of debate and dispute. But from what we know, the second wife, Abby, who had terrible relations with the two daughters, went up to John Morse's room around 10 a.m. To clean up his room. She walked upstairs, and apparently she met her killer. The killer took an axe, whacked her on the side of the head, and then when she fell down, hacked her 17 times on the back of the head. So the old mean old stepmother was dead. Now, Andrew returned about 10:30 from his morning constitutional walk. His key wouldn't open the door, so he banged on for attention, and Maggie, the maid, went to unlock the door. When asked about, well, where is Abby, my wife, the 25-year-old servant said that she had been called to the house of a friend who was very, very sick, and she wasn't there. Now, that was her story. So now, once Andrew went inside and he was resting in the living room, Lizzie told Maggie to go to a department store sale and let her go. But Maggie said, "No, I'm tired. I don't feel good. I've been made to wash all these windows. It's so very hot today. I'm just going to go take a nap." And of course, she was also recovering from that terrible, terrible episode of food poisoning. So a little bit later on, about 11:05 to 11:10, Maggie was resting, and Lizzie called up from downstairs and said, "Maggie, come quick. Father's dead. Someone came in and killed him." So Maggie and Lizzie rounded up downstairs and found that Andrew was slumped in a couch in the sitting room, and he had been struck 10 or 11 times with a hatchet. One of his eyeballs actually had split cleanly, and that meant that he had been asleep when he was attacked. He couldn't even defend himself. Now, here came the trial, and apparently the police did not do a very, very good job. First of all, they didn't like the way Lizzie acted. They said she was too calm and poised when she recounted what she had been doing. But be that as it may, she was nothing more than a suspect. They didn't check her for bloodstains nor her clothes, and they really didn't search her room very well because she was said she wasn't feeling well. Now, I don't think they, Tony, as someone that's familiar with investigations, they wouldn't do that today, would they?
No, they absolutely would not. And some of the things that I'm looking at are the times of death is that Abby went upstairs, it looks like around 11 o'clock, 10:30.
Around 10. She went up around 10 to tidy up John Morse's room.
There we go. And then Andrew returned at 10:30, but she was killed on the staircase or in the room? Do we know that?
We believe it was.
He was killed in the room. He was killed in the
room,
laying on the couch.
Okay, that would explain why the maid didn't find her whenever she went upstairs to rest. So that's I was kind of looking at those times, but it seems odd that the maid's in the house. And you hack somebody, when she hit her the first time, she just fell, maybe without a noise. But you know, the maid's working in the house while a murder's going on and doesn't hear a thing.
Now that's very suspect, Tony. That really is.
I mean, you know, if you saw her killer. She's probably in the murder, you know, and the axe in her hand. She's probably let out some sort of scream, you know, more than likely. But it's possible that she just, unless that Lizzie had the axe behind her back, and you know, she knows Lizzie, and then all of a sudden Lizzie, you know, hits her in the head with the axe. She may not have time to cry out, but still yet with. You know, if the maid not hearing nothing kind of throws a red flag.
Well, it does, but then again, we don't really know if it was Lizzie or not. I mean, it turns out there are five suspects to this murder.
Right.
I mean, and every one of them had a motive, and apparently they all had an opportunity. They had motive and opportunity.
But if it wasn't Lizzie, that means there's two people in the home that didn't hear a thing. While, you know, if it was a third person, why didn't he kill Lizzie? Why didn't he, you know, that would be some of the questions I would ask, you know.
Well, so you got to figure back at the time, Falls was not very well known for killings. All that the police would be doing was taking care of prostitutes, robberies, and only small petty crimes at that time. Other places around the United States had killings. And at that time, like I said, the cops during that time were not prepared for such an investigation.
So it was a smaller town then.
Yes, a very smaller town. Also, you got to know that the Lizzie Borden house, all the rooms are connected. So in order to pass in from one room to another, there is no privacy. It's all one room, one room, one room.
Wow.
Yes, the girls had no privacy. Nobody had privacy in the house. Also, that house was very much more narrow than the rest of the houses around the area.
Because you've been there, right, Jeremiah?
I have been. I actually stayed a night there, a full night.
Mm.
Yeah.
How did you sleep?
Like I said, I mean, I've lived in haunted locations before, not by choice, at a very young age. That was on a different talk last week on ParanormalCast. But... Yeah, I slept. I mean, it's unnerving knowing that, you know, the soul of a killer could be there, but also know that it's all of that it is. It's the soul of what it is. But that's not the topic we're on. the documentary of the Lizzie Borden case is really interesting because the cops never even checked the women's dressers. Do you know why that is?
Why?
The reason why is because back then, going through a woman's clothing and her dresser drawer was an invasion of privacy and also would make you look as, even back then, as a pervert. Yeah,
so she could have hid her clothing, and then she burned. Didn't a person say later that she burned a dress after the murder?
Yes.
I did not hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. She burned a dress and said that it was covered with paint. So that she got away
with it. They also found three hatchets behind the fireplace. One with a burner handle.
Amazing. Amazing. Three hatchets.
Three hatchets, one with a broken handle.
It was one of the hatchet heads inordinately covered with dust and ash, the one without a handle in it.
Yeah, she said that it was dirty and she was cleaning it with ash, which was normal back then.
Right, absolutely. You get the rust off. That would be normal from back then.
I'm just kind of laughing. It sounds like police techniques were not very well developed, were they, Tony?
No. And here's another question I would have: why are you cleaning the axe head of a broken hatchet?
Right.
So this.
Why would the hatchet be broken?
Yes, and why would the hatchet be broken? Exactly. So, but this is absolutely I've heard, you know, I've watched a few shows on Lizzie Borden and things like that, done a little bit of research, but this is absolutely a very interesting case after reading the notes here.
Well, there's an amazing job. Yeah, I had several sources, and now I've got to bring up another interesting story. There is an author named Ed McBain. And what he claims, and this is very interesting, this would have been hot stuff back in 1892, but he claims that Abby, the second wife, the bad stepmother, came in on Lizzie and Maggie having sex, and that they were lesbians. And the death of Abby occurred right after that, and then when Lizzie Borden was confessing this to her father, he was not having it, and so she just absolutely whacked him in the head with a hatchet. That this was a murder based on lust and the fact that they were lesbian lovers. Now, who knows? But it makes for pretty good fiction, at least. So. One only knows, you know, what really happened in that house. Now, there is there's a witness that said that Lizzie Borden was outside of the house at about 5 minutes after 11 and just came walking in. And he saw Lizzie come walking in. He was a neighbor. That would have given her some kind of an alibi. Another alibi for her sister, Emily, was that she was 25 miles away visiting family. But it's possible that she could have come in, done the dirty deed, and left, and just waited for the telegram to come to her that her stepmother and father had been killed. So there are some extenuating circumstances here that it could have been, of course, Lizzie Borden, it could have been Emily Borden, her sister, it could have been Maggie Sullivan, the maid. It could have also been William Borden, a so-called son of Andrew Borden, who was there trying to extort money out of his father. Or it could have been John Morse, who was the maternal brother and uncle of Lizzie Borden and Emily Borden. So, I mean, there are really five people in this whole mess that could have been responsible for the death of Abby Borden and Andrew Borden. I mean, there really are.
Who inherited the money?
Well, because Abby apparently died first, then the estate returned back to Andrew Borden, and when he died, the estate then went to the two daughters, Emily and Lizzie. That's the way it worked.
Did the alleged son get anything? And this is something that probably we'll never know, but just a question. Did Abby and Lizzie give Andrew's illegitimate son any monies? Is there any evidence?
Don't know.
We would
have to go up to the town. We would have to go look through the Register of Deeds office, or the registrar's office, and find out what happened in probate court. Actually, we would have to do that. Yeah. And I don't know, Jeremiah, do you know if that's ever been discussed up there in Massachusetts as to who, cause you know what it is, follow the money. So
yeah.
Do you have any idea if we've actually followed the money in this case?
To be honest with you, no, I personally don't. That would actually be really interesting to find out, honestly. That was a really good question, Tony.
But you know, to me, this guy shows up a day or so before the murders. The stepmother that's standing in all of
it. Do know that Andrew was out of town when that happened.
He was out of town?
Andrew
has an alibi?
He had an alibi. He actually left. I think he went either to New York or he went down. He came down this way towards me, North Carolina.
Like that kind of removes him as a suspect then, if he has that alibi. But then we can kind of cross him off because the route I was going is if he was still in town, it would have been very easy, apparently.
But he did return. He did return a few days after finding out that the family did die. He did return. That is what I do know.
Yeah, but
it took him a few days to come back.
Right. So I guess logically we could kind of mark him off as a suspect. And now we have, and Lizzie's sister is 25 miles away, which 25 miles back in those days, that's a day's ride.
Yeah.
That's a day's travel. So for her to get for a fee, and that's with a guy on a good, with a good horse, so for her to travel 25 miles back to kill the parents and run back, she's going to, whomever she's staying with are going to notice her gone for a day and a half. In my mind.
That is true.
Okay.
What I was telling John beforehand, what about this being a two-person job?
Right, and there was an axe murder right before the trial or something like that, maybe a couple weeks or something.
Yes.
Where there was another lady that was killed. But they caught the fellow. I think it's on down in the notes. I don't recall his name. But they caught him. But that's odd that, a town that doesn't have very much crime, all of a sudden, within a month of each other, there are two very similar murders.
Well, it could always be a copycat case.
Yes. He'd read about it. Exactly. He very, very well could have been.
Yeah.
So, but I mean,
I think it's personally honest, me, I have a few theories. It could either be two people, like I said, you know, the mom getting one end of a shtick and the father getting Lizzie, or, like you said, the maid doing both or Lizzie doing both. I have no real idea. I'm kind of perplexed, and it's like to be or not to be type of thing to me. Like, who could you really blame with such an ill amount of evidence against people? You know?
Right. But now, it looks like that a few weeks before the murders, that Lizzie and her sister had bought, they were, in arguments over the properties, her dad giving properties to the stepchildren and to his wife's family, that they had got a rental property for $1 and sold it back to their dad for $5,000, which is about $142,000 in today's money. So it's not out of the realm of possibilities. I mean, each of those girls has 70-something thousand dollars, you know, $71,000 a piece. And, you know, hey, why not, have somebody, give somebody, a couple thousand dollars, $500 would have been being equal to probably $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 in today's money. So maybe Lizzie had them bumped. Maybe Lizzie had them killed, and she got it all, and her sister got it all.
That's a good theory.
And she ran into Lizzie, but it would make sense that maybe if Lizzie was looking for Abby, that's the reason she was upstairs, you know. And I'm reading here, they presented the skulls. They cut the murder victim's heads off and presented the skulls as evidence. Do we know where that Abby was hit first?
I believe she was hit on the side of the head, near her ear.
So she's.
Yeah, she also got hit in the back and the neck as well.
But was she facing? When we're saying side of the head, was it like she was facing her assailant, or was the assailant behind her and smacks her in the head? You see what I'm saying?
Behind her.
You're gonna have a little bit of a different deal going on. Because if she ran into, for somebody to get that close to her, she had to know them, or they were waiting on her in that room, knowing that she was going to come to that room. So get that close to them. If she didn't recognize the assailant, she's going to take off, or she's going to start squalling. Or they were where they knew that she was going to be, which could have been Lizzie.
I mean, for all we know, it could have been Andrew Borden that just wanted to off his wife. We don't know. And then he snuck outside. Then he came in, had a hard time getting in the door. So he had a witness that he came into the house. You know, we don't know that. We don't know if that's not the case. Then lo and behold, he gets offed. Wow.
So, Andrew Borden was lying on the couch, right?
He was on the couch with his boots on, but yet Lizzie had stated that she took his boots off and put his slippers on. Well, you know, who knows?
Right, and then she said, give conflicting stories on that, you know, she was in the kitchen ironing and then she was someplace else. But now they were giving her morphine because of the trauma. So that the morphine probably is going to affect her a little bit when she's trying to recall those things. But you know, something that traumatic, you're not going to forget where you were at, no matter. I mean, how medicated they had her. You know, she's not going to. I mean, she either took the boots off or she was ironing. Which one was it? You know, that's a big jump there. You know, I was ironing and I didn't hear crap. You know, how
so
far?
This is what
you were,
this is what I found about Abby, because you were asking. She was struck in the head with a hatchet around 18 times. He further concluded that she was facing her killer at the time of the attack, but her first blow struck on the side of the head, causing her to turn around and face down on the floor, at which time 17 blows were directed at the back of her head. So
okay,
she was
that,
facing her killer.
Okay, so facing her killer, she knew him. Because there were no defense, from what we can tell, there were no defensive marks, right? Nothing on the arms, hands?
No,
everything was to the head.
Nothing about that. Nothing
right.
About that.
So she's known the killer, and Lizzie knew she was going to go into that room. Lizzie could have been looking for. She has the axe hidden. Stepmom pops up the steps or goes into the room to clean it. Lizzie walks up and just bashes her and then finishes her off. Because she's had to know the killer, guys, because or she would have screamed or fled or thrown her arms up. You're not going to stand there and just look at somebody that you don't know and go, what are you doing here? What are you going to do with that axe? You here to chop wood? You know? Especially when the axe got raised up, you know, anybody would throw their arms up. Anybody. So she's known the killer. The killer was absolutely, obviously it had to be close to her to hit her with an axe. And, just hit her before she knew what was happening. Then finished her off with other. She was an over. Lizzie Borden was an overachiever as far as a murderess, because she probably killed her with the first blow. But the other 17 shows also a crime of passion, of hatred, love or hate, one of the two. You're not going to hit. You're just going to what?
You said something about Lizzie being lesbian. I just found something else. Nance O'Neill and Lizzie actually ended up becoming a thing, and Emma was not happy about it.
Well,
right.
There you go.
I'm reading this right off of legendofamerica.com. My jaw has dropped right now. I didn't even know that myself. Another sip of Yangling
so
will help me.
Lizzie and the maid had something going on?
Maybe.
So let me read it to you so you guys aren't getting confused. All right, so this is after Lizzie was acclaimed a murderer. And a while after, the sisters lived peacefully up in the upscale neighborhood at Fall River and until 1904, when Lizzie Borden met an actress named Nance O'Neill. The two formed a strong bond with some even speculating that they were lovers. Emma did not approve of the friendship, and after Lizzie threw a party for O'Neill and her theoretical troupe at the home in 1905, Emma abruptly moved. Yeah.
Did Emma die of natural causes? Lizzie's sister?
She was living in a nursing home in New Market, New Hampshire, where she had moved for health reasons and allegedly to avoid renewed publicity following the publication of another book about the murders. Yeah, so she died of natural causes.
because that, well, the reason I ask is, you know, if Emma didn't approve of Lizzie's lifestyle, then, you know, if she killed, I think she killed her dad and stepmother out of frustration and greed, because she was frustrated with the way her and her sister were being treated, and it was obvious that the father was not going to provide for them very well. So I think that was what triggered the murders of Andrew.
Yeah,
and Abby, Andrew and Abby.
So you're saying, Tony, that Andrew and Abby were killed by Lizzie? Is that what you're saying?
I think they were killed. I think they were killed by Lizzie, because there's too much. I wasn't there, but just from what I'm reading, you're not going to. And I don't know that the maid, I'd like to see if she all of a sudden got well-to-do or moved off. Does anybody know what happened to the maid after the murders?
Well, she moved to Montana and married a man.
I kind of think
the maid and Lizzie were in cahoots on this. That's what I do,
too. I think you're right. I think you guys are right, because, you know, you can't kill two people.
You can't slam somebody with a hatchet and not make a noise.
Right.
Especially a skull.
and then right, exactly. And then you don't call upstairs and go, somebody's broken in and killed father. So whenever that she ran downstairs, you know, she would have seen blood all over Lizzie. I think the maid was in on it, and who knows what was going on. Who knows how Lizzie's dad treated the maid? You know, who knows what he did? Who knows?
What happens if the maid was, like, forced to be silenced? What about that? Because that just, like,
right,
went through my head. Like, think about it. She goes in, sees the stepmother dead, then goes downstairs. Like, how would you not see blood all over a mirror or something? I mean, the way the mother was hit, she obviously, like it said, she spun and laid face down on the ground. Like, there's not going to be blood on the ceiling, on the wall. I mean, if you strike somebody, especially with the axes back then, they were extremely sharp.
Oh, yeah, they used them all the time, because they heated with coal and wood, you know.
Yeah.
So they were either
chopping
kindling or chopping wood for heat. Well, I mean, it was August or something like that, so they wouldn't have been, but they still would have been used quite a bit in those days for a lot of different tasks. Now, which is kind of a, one question that I also would ask is Lizzie right or left-handed, and what side was the first blow? What side of the head was her stepmother hit the first time?
Ask John that question first. I'm gonna see if I can find something on that.
That one I do not know, and I didn't. Again, I'm not the criminal investigation genius that Tony Filozzi is, and I don't know.
No, I'm not
that,
either.
I'm just
asking questions.
Super good question, Tony.
And the, you know, just, you know, if I was building a case, which, you know, what I do is more with ordinances. I don't do murders and things like that. What I do in my day job, I put together cases when people break ordinance laws. So I still have to put the cases together to go before a judge and to go get criminal summons and things like that. So I have to be, you know, fairly meticulous.
She was
Okay.
The killer was left-handed. Lizzie was right-handed.
See, that throws the.
That puts it perhaps on Maggie Sullivan. is what I always thought. Once I read it, I said, that has to be Maggie Sullivan.
Well, can we find, boy, if we knew was Maggie Sullivan left-handed, was Emma left-handed, was Andrew's son, illegitimate son, John Morris. I mean, who was left-handed? That would be one of my – or now, Lizzie could have – it could have been a backstroke too, which probably more likely is going to come from the side, but she could have had it in smack, you know, with a reverse hitter like that. That would explain it. But she's not going to have a whole lot of power, but if you're hitting somebody with an axe, how much power do you need? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into this case that, I mean, this, like a lot of them say, I mean, this is one of America's cases that will probably just stay stone cold until the end of time. I don't even think there's a way to reopen such a case and find out who actually did it.
But it's super interesting, though. I mean, I would like to ask some, you know, find out who was left-handed, and because, you know, like I said, we can just speculate, but it's very interesting to be able to go back over these cases and ask some questions, you know, that they may have overlooked. And what's really gotten, I still think that Lizzie killed her because of burning the dress and the monies a couple of weeks before. So Lizzie and them goes, well, dang, if Dad and her's out of the way, we don't have to worry about anything. And they're not going to give us anything,
yeah.
You know. So I think they're motivated by that. And then when you burn the dress, I mean, if she had paint on the dress, more than likely, you know, she would have kept the dress to if she's ever painting again. But if she's kind of well-to-do, it looks like the maid would have been painting or a handyman would have been painting. And then I would have said, okay, show me what was painted. Show me where the fresh paint is.
What was Maggie's last name?
Sullivan.
What do you think?
Was that Sullivan?
Yes, sir.
Let me see if Maggie Sullivan was left-handed.
What do you think about the paint, John?
I don't think very much about it. I don't think it happened. It's almost like two people did these murders. It's like it could have been Maggie Sullivan did Abby and Lizzie did her father. They killed her father.
I don't think Lizzie did both of them either, because she'd had to make too much noise. And then Maggie's going to hear you don't kill two people. I mean, the house, you say the house is very small, and it all kind of runs into each other.
The walls are extremely thick as well. Think about it. Back then, that's firm wood in between each and every single wall. If you go to the house itself, you could have one person. Me and John could be talking in one room. You'd close one door, close another door, and you wouldn't hear us talking in the other room. Like, we could be, like, hucking beer bottles on the floor. The only place you're going to hear it is beneath us.
In relation to where Abby was killed, Lizzie says she was downstairs. Where in relation, if you were directly below the room where Abby was killed, where would you be at in the house?
I think either in the kitchen or where Andrew Sullivan died, which is in the living room.
So if somebody, if Lizzie was downstairs, you know, during this, shouldn't she have heard the body hit the floor if she was in the kitchen and then heard the
No idea, man.
Right, but I'm
no
idea. I'm just finding it hard to get my head wrapped around, no pun intended, yeah, you got to watch me. I'm a cut up. Yeah, but anyway, I think they were both in on it. They had to be because there's too much noise going on. And if you're hacking somebody and you're that mad at them, you're probably going to be saying some unkind words to them as you're hacking them to death.
Oh, absolutely. No, I believe it. It was a two-person job. There's no other way around it. Hands down, it has to be a two-person job.
Well,
and then
they
found three hatchets behind a furnace in the basement. Why would there be three hatchets
behind the furnace?
Behind the furnace in the basement.
Right.
Why three, though? That's my thing. Three. One for the maid, two for the sisters. I think
possible.
After reading all of this, I think the sister left knowing it was not a good idea.
Well, I'm going to add something to this whole mix. If Maggie Sullivan was over here as an indentured servant, as she was, and if she was found out to be the lesbian lover of Lizzie Borden, then she had every reason to kill Abby Borden, because she would not want to be for that to come out, and she would get deported back to Ireland, number one.
Right.
So if she kills Abby Borden, then Lizzie Borden says, well, I'm just going to kill Dad.
I think they had it cooked up. I think everybody had something to gain. I didn't know that Sullivan was an indentured servant, and that makes me believe even more it's a two-person gig, because Sullivan, how much longer did she have? See, she had to buy herself out of indentured servitude, didn't she? I mean, she had to have some.
Well, that's the way it works.
Seven years, and then they're out of indentured servitude, and most of them, a lot of them stayed because they had nowhere to go and signed up, you know, and stayed on. But how long had Sullivan worked for the family? How much longer did she have? And a lot of times, servants like that were treated, who knows how that Lizzie's dad treated her and what he done to her, you know?
Well, that's right, because he certainly had a little bit of a reputation by some biographers as having abused Lizzie, and in more way, and not maybe sexually and physically. So, you know, who knows what all went on with poor Maggie.
Right. So she would have definitely something to gain. And Lizzie
and
had
something
to
lose.
And they had, they both had motives.
At the same time, she had two other girls that were reported of being abused and sexually. So with that being said, I mean, maybe Lizzie was like, maybe Lizzie felt bad for the servant because she was also going through it, but the servant can't lash out in any way or go talk to somebody about it because those are her pretty much employers at the time.
Right.
So maybe Lizzie felt some sort of sorrow for her and was like, this is a good idea. Like, not only will you gain, you'll get a cut, sister will get a cut, and mentioning me, of course, I need to get my hands wet with some of this money.
Yeah, and how did she make her way out west? She had to have money to do that. She had.
Yes,
to,
she did.
She had. So, at the trial, you know, they admit they didn't check Borden for bloodstains, which again, that in that time era, you know, there's not going to be any female officers probably, and you're not. The male officers are definitely not going to you know, say we need strip search and check you for blood. You know,
that's what I was talking about earlier. None of the police went through the women's stuff because that
right.
was frowned upon
yeah.
back then.
Absolutely. So all she had to do really was she had to wash her hands. Well, she's going to be blood. The dress is going to be really
blood. That hatchet right up her skirt.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's I think Lizzie did it, but I think she had help.
I think it was a two-person operation. What do you think, Jeremiah?
Like I said, two-person operation. I've been like that for a long time, ever hearing about this. Even tonight, it even has me leaning more because I'm a little older now and know the right way to search and stuff. So I think it was hands down a two-person job.
Were there any crime scene photos taken?
Oh, my goodness. In 1892?
What?
Maybe not. But maybe.
Would you
say,
Tony?
Well, there's photos of Borden on the chair, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, there were photos back then. Actually, that was one of the very first few times a camera was actually used for a case, and they realized that this is a good way to make sure evidence is kept. Also, during that time, there were 2,000 people all over that area, and family members were walking in and out of that house during the whole crime scene. They did not section it off.
Ah,
so
there are going to be bloody footprints
yeah.
all over the place, and she would be able to explain the bloody.
They were not allowed near the crime scenes. They were not allowed near the bodies, but they were allowed in the house.
Well, the reason I want to see want to know if there's crime scene photos to see if there's any. But people walking around, it's not going to do you any good to see if there's a bloody footprint, because you're not going to be able to get away from getting blood on your shoes. I mean, you commit two murders like that, two bloody murders. I mean, you're going to be covered. Your shoes are going to be covered. Your front of your clothing is going to be covered. Your hands are going to be covered. So that brings the question. From they say that these murders happened at this particular time, but there was a witness that saw Alexander go in the house around 10:30. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. When did the police get the call? Do we know? When, how long, or what time the police were notified?
I don't know.
I don't remember ever seeing that.
You see where I'm going with that?
If it was an hour or so
before the police were notified, and back in those days. They'll be able to tell the bleeding kind of the blood started to congeal, but maybe they're going to pay attention to that, maybe they're not, but that's going to give Lizzie and her accomplice time to clean up and hide the axes, and then she burns the dress later.
Well, now who's
saying that?
Second
Street was pretty busy.
Do what now?
Go ahead, John.
Well, I'll say first of all, whose dress was burned? We don't know whose dress was burned. Was it Maggie's or was it Lizzie's or was it Emily's? And then you bring up another point. I mean, you know, who would have jumped in and said, "Oh my goodness, a crime has been committed"?
Right. Now, let's see, what does it say? Russell, I guess he's a policeman. Who is Russell? Russell testified on August 8, 1892. She had witnessed Borden burn a dress in the kitchen stove, saying it had been ruined when she brushed against wet paint. During the trial, the defense never attempted to challenge his statement. So I think she was burning bloody clothes.
Whose clothes were they?
Right. I mean, it could have been an accomplice, but I'd say it was her. But she had to kill one of them. She had to have.
I vote for Maggie killed Dad. Maggie killed Mom, and Lizzie killed Dad. That's what I vote for. With the knowledge of Emily.
Definitely killed Dad. Hands down, Lizzie killed Dad. Good old Daddy, because Lizzie had plenty of resentment. She wasn't even happy when he sent her out on that trip to Europe. Yeah, she was irate at that point. I mean, wouldn't you be? I mean, you're living in a rundown house with no hot water. All the rich girls have the hot water. Your clothes are ragged, but yet your daddy's got money, and he's giving nieces and nephews houses up in nice areas where they have gas lamps, so they can walk around the house, and it's a little bit warmer in the house with the glass with gas lamps strewn about your house. And they're walking around with older night lamps that they have to use kerosene dipped in a wick so they can light it.
I'm telling you.
Lizzie killed Dad, for sure. And she for sure gave him good old 41.
Number 41.
Lizzie went to the barn. What did Lizzie go to the barn for? Just to hang out? I mean, I'm pretty sure
knows?
She's not milking a cow.
Yeah, hang out with the cows. Yeah, that's probably it.
Yeah,
Tony. Please go ahead.
There's all sorts of holes in her testimony in the timeline, but she tried to buy some acid. So apparently, like a few days before, said it was for cleaning a sealskin cloak. Purchased some prussic acid. Okay, what's prussic acid used for? Is that if it's cleaning a sealskin cloak, probably to get stains off of things.
Exactly.
What's she worried about? Going to be getting some stains out of?
I know. Well, I tell you what, guys, the British lady has alerted me that we have 90 seconds. We have had a fantastic evening, and there are 60 seconds. We've had a fantastic evening talking about Lizzie Borden, and we might just revisit this because we've kind of uncovered a lot of things. So I want to say, first of all, thank you to Tony Filosi for being here. It's always great to have you. Jeremiah, thanks for filling in tonight. We're going to have you filling in, or not necessarily filling in, but joining us on some other podcasts. So I want to say thank you to both of you for being here. And as we examine the story of Lizzie Borden and all the people around there who could have done something. So I want to say have a great week. We'll be back next Monday night on Murder 1-2-3, and have a good week. Tony, have a good one. And you too, Jeremiah,
you too.
Okay?
Good
you
meeting
too.
You, Jeremiah.
Nice meeting you, Tony.
All right, you guys have a great week.